Chapter 5. Amaya and I decided to hopefully catch up later, and she went up the hill back toward the manor while I entered the stables in search of Rylan. Even though these stables were even bigger than the ones that I carry in, it wasn't hard to find him. All I had to do was follow the angry mutters floating back from one of the stalls, and there he was, roughly brushing Prosper's flank with a stiff-haired brush as he chastised himself for things I couldn't really hear.
"Alex Person, is you?"
Prosper's pigeon-speak voice entered my brain through the thread of our mental bond. "Hey, Props, how are you?" I asked.
"Is good, but Alex Person's Riley is upset. I do not know why."
"That's okay, I got it from here," I beamed back.
"I'm just so stupid, I guess."
Rylan finally finished the tirade he was on and sighed as he slowed his brushing. "Hey, what did I say about that kind of talk?" I finally made my presence known and came fully into the stall. Rylan jumped sky high and dropped the wooden brush as he spun around.
I...
He stammered horribly and then snatched the brush up from the ground so he could wring it between his hands. He swallowed hard and then tried again.
I was...
It wasn't really any better the second time around, so I stepped forward, took the poor abused brush out of Rylan's hands, cast it aside, and then placed both hands on his shoulders. "What's going on, kiddo?" I asked, and ducked so I could try and make eye contact with him. But he kept his gaze firmly on the ground, so I stepped back a little. "Did I do something wrong?" At this, his brown eyes snapped up to me and his mouth dropped open.
"No!"
he gasped.
"Never!"
"Then what's wrong?" I pried again.
"I'll never even say goodbye,"
he blurted out.
"You were going to make me stay beyond anyway, and I was angry at you because of it, so I avoided you. I changed my mind, but before I could catch you, you left to go save Shay, which made me feel even worse, and then I found out you actually almost died, and, you know, I just..."
The distraught stable boy had taken to pacing as he revved himself up into a miserable dervish of self-flagellation, and I just had to snag him by the sleeve to get him to stop. "I'm fine, Rye, see?" I gripped his chin so he would actually look at me. "I'm not dead."
"And you're not disappointed?"
he asked and bit his lip. "No, of course not," I said. "I needed you at Ithaca, and from what I heard, you did well to hold down the fort." Finally, Rylan smiled a bit. But when I smiled back, his face crumpled, so I brought him in for a rough hug.
"I'm glad you didn't die."
He sniffled against my shoulder. "Same, kid," I said as we parted. And I scrubbed my hand through his mop of shaggy hair. "Oh, one more thing. I was hoping you could fix this for me." I reached into my pocket, pulled out the small carved pendant, and held it out to him.
"You still have it?"
he asked, as he examined the little work of art sitting in his palm. "Of course I do," I grinned and ruffled his hair once more. "It's lucky. So what do you think? Can you fix it?"
"Yeah, no problem,"
he said, and stashed the pendant away in his trouser pocket. "Great. Now, let me help you with the rest of Prosper's tack," I said, as I busied myself with the straps of his 3-seater saddle. "Hey, good thinking by bringing the extended saddle this trip just in case."
"The, oh,
Rylan said as he worked on the canterfly's harness.
"I didn't even realize I grabbed that one. Odd."
I grunted as I removed the ungainly saddle and hung it up on the designated wooden peg.
"Is Gelf!"
Prosper FM beamed into my head, and I glanced at the orange and black butterfly Pegasus. "What?" I responded. Before he could answer me, Rylan derailed my train of thought when he asked a question, but I completely missed it due to the fact I was glaring at the saddle like it was one of those "what's wrong" picture puzzles in a highlights magazine. Something about the saddle was fucky, but I couldn't put my finger on it.
"You are magistrate now, aren't you?"
Rylan asked in a way that meant it was probably the second go-around with this question. "Huh, no." I turned back to Prosper and removed the saddle pad so it could air out as well. "What makes you say that?"
"Well, you killed Vane, and Vane was magistrate of Gate Town before you."
He shrugged like it was just that simple.
"Don't duelists just inherit everything from their last person they kill?"
"Assets and property, yes," I said, as we both got Prosper situated with some fresh water and hay next. "But according to Mr. Jenner, there's a bit more involved with becoming a magistrate."
"Like what?"
he asked. He then got the hoof pick so he could clean Prosper's hooves. Apart from joining that club thing Arcus was part of, which sounds boring as hell. I don't know. I snorted as I pulled out some ash roots from the crate stacked on the other side of the table. To be honest, I might have fallen asleep when Jenner was doing his lecture thing. In any case, I really don't want to be Magistrate of Gatetown anyway. Schroots! Prosper hollered over the bond, and I laughed while he slurped up the purple carrot thing with his alien coiled muzzle.
I'll try not to fall asleep when Jenner talks too,
Ryland snickered, as he tidied away the tools.
Okay, so if you're not going to be magistrate, are you still going to host the mid-crescent ball like Vane was planning to?
What do you mean, what ball? Am I responsible for something I don't know about again? I interrogated as we walked out of the stables.
Well, yeah, probably,
he said, and was absolutely no help.
You're the famous Asher Brightwood, Dad. People want to get to know you, so even if you won't be the magistrate, everyone will probably want to put you on the ball just to get a glimpse of you. Talk of the Isle is Vane was a crazy tyrant hoarding tarvestones.
What does that have to do with me hosting a ball?
You're Gatetown's hero, he said, as if the fact was obvious. I'm pretty sure you won't be able to get out of this one.
I'm pretty sure you won't be able to get out of this, I said, and then I pounced on him and put him in a headlock.
Dad!
he wailed, which only made me laugh maniacally. Go ahead, get out of my hold, I challenged, and I laughed even more when he wriggled ineffectively in my grip like a hooked trout until he tired himself out.
Go out! I can't!
He huffed in his bent-over posture.
You're too strong!
Actually, there is an easy way to escape, no matter how strong I am, I said.
How?
He asked in a muffled voice. First, you're going to want to wrap your left arm around the back of my waist so you can grab my opposite hip, I instructed, and waited for him to do as I said. Then you're going to step in toward me with your right foot between my legs like you're trying to twist out of my arm and face me. When I try to follow, you're going to pull my hip with your left hand, and with your right, you're going to grab under my left knee and lift.
At the same time? He questioned.
Yeah, in one fluid motion, I said. And then I let him go and straightened. If you do it fast enough, the element of surprise should be enough to free you, especially because anybody who's dumb enough to do this has obviously underestimated you. Try it on me, and I'll show you. Ryland fixed his baggy shirt and brushed the hair out of his eyes as he scrutinized me in concentration. Then he came up behind me like I did to him and hooked me in a headlock with his right arm.
And grab, step, pull, lift.
I did the steps as I said them in half time so that when he inevitably lost his balance, I was able to catch him so he didn't land on his ass. See?
Well, that was incredible, he gasped. Okay, do it to me.
I laughed at his enthusiasm. And then he and I spent the next 20 minutes or so roughhousing until he was able to mostly squirm free of my hold.
Squirrel!
A familiar caw sounded overhead as the dusty little gold-seeker moth circled excitedly overhead.
Rufus!
I called and held out my wrist so the yellow crow moth could perch on his four fuzzy legs.
How are you, buddy?
Squirrel! Squirrel!
The little guy cawed and nuzzled under my hand when I petted him.
What's up?
Ryland asked, and I shrugged when Rufus then launched off my hand again and flew toward the manor.
I don't know, but I think he wants us to follow him, I said,
and then shoved the kid's shoulder.
Race ya!
The two of us raced after the crow moth, as he led us up to the manor and directly to the library on the main floor.
Squirrel!
Rufus cawed as he flapped around like he was caught in a hurricane.
Calm down, you impossible creature! You're getting my desk all dusty!
Jenner's voice floated from the center of the library, where a circular desk was situated and piled high with books that the koala archivist was in the middle of cataloging.
Ka-kow!
The gold seeker replied, and twirled in a rapid corkscrew. This had the effect of causing even more of his fine gold dust to drift through the shafts of afternoon light beaming in through the dazzling skylights, and Jenner huffed.
At least you managed to do one thing I've asked and brought me Alex,
he grumbled, as he used a rag to dust off the maroon leather book in front of him. How goes it, Mr. Jenner? I asked, as I leaned my hip against the desk while Ryland ventured off for something to occupy himself.
Splendid, sir,
the koala man replied, as he opened said book with a crack of its freshly bound spine.
I'm glad you came. I have just finished abridging the collective data on forging with Herald Corps. It is condensed and categorized, starting with Herald Corps types red through violet, followed by which metals are best in combination with that particular core.
Can you drop a refresher course on me real fast? I requested, as I turned the book around to face me, and I flipped to a page with a block of ink text that looked like it would make me cross-eyed with boredom if I tried to read it all in one sitting. And that was just the first page.
Red and orange cores are the most common of Herald cores dropped by the Demon Scourge, Jenner said as he eagerly rocked up on the balls of his feet and made the stool he was standing on wobble a hair. The next tier are yellow and green cores, which are a little more uncommon, and finally the third tier of the blue and violet variety, which are, of course, rare.
Right, that sounds familiar, I said. Is there anything in here about why my Herald Blade with the blue core from Shay's headpiece only lasted me 3 hits before it disintegrated? I thought only the core ran out of power, but the entire blade collapsed into dust. I was still miffed about that, mostly because the sword itself was given to me by Zoe, and it was given to her by her mother. The significance wasn't lost on me.
What was the etching on the blade after it was forged? Jenner asked. What shape did it take?
A circle, I began to say, but then paused. Wait, that's wrong. It started out as a triangle just at the base of the blade, and then changed to a circle, and finally a half moon when I used it for the last time.
And the core was blue, correct?
The koala man clarified, and I nodded.
Yes, it seems as if there is an inverse correlation involved. The more powerful or rare a core is, the more limited it is in usage. The shapes denote how many times a herald's attributes can be called upon during battle. So when it started as a triangle with 3 sides, that meant you had 3 uses until the core burned out.
So if it had been a square, I would have had 4 chances, I gathered.
Exactly so, he confirmed as he tweaked his monocle. But typically, blue and violet stones only have about 1 to 2 uses, so the fact yours had 3 was quite special.
All the more reason why I'm upset it's gone, I said. Why is that, by the way?
The rare types use up a lot of power all at once instead of steadily over time like the common ones. And even the strongest forged metal is typically not equipped to withstand that strain. Jenner continued. Red and orange cores typically do not leave behind a sigil after they are forged because they last indefinitely.
And what are the attributes of the common ones? I asked.
Red's attributes are strength and value of adaptability.
He looked upward as if he was reading complicated quadratic equations off the whiteboard in his mind.
Orange cores usually deal with values of speed and flexibility. You will need a gifted alchemist in order to do an assessment on specifics because you can only determine the value when the forging process has been completed.
So you can't tell which ones are the best if you have several of the same type, I noted out loud for my own benefit. And I can't just add more of the same type or otherwise to one weapon because bad things happen.
Essentially, yes,
the koala archivist said as he tucked his furry hands into the pockets of his blue coat.
The theory behind it is vague at best, but the cores seem to have violent reactions just when merged, never mind forging. In fact, the reason why this used to be outlawed in the first place was due to an inordinately high loss of lives of alchemical metallurgists whenever the attempt was made.
Dark hell, I said, as I thumbed through a section with hand-drawn diagrams. Jenner, did you even use colored ink?
Well, of course I did, he replied.
And he wasn't even perturbed by my sudden change in topic.
I take deep pride in my work.
Remind me to pay you extra somehow, I commented. And then I frowned as something occurred to me. Wait, before you said combining Herald Corps used to be outlawed, implying they are not anymore. What happened? Am I going to go to Asher jail if I make an illegal lightsaber or what?
I do not know what a lightsaber is. But here is where our old friend Tovish has come to our aid yet again,
he said with a fond smile that crinkled the corners of his wizened eyes.
After the uprisings, the official laws were burnt up in the infraction. So according to Tovish's annotations, this is the law that is not really written in law anymore.
Oh, I love loopholes, I said with a big grin, as I closed the book with a snap, hopped off the desk, and tucked the handbook into the back of my armored belt. Jenner, really, this is fantastic. I can't wait to show it to Horace. Name your price.
Oh, don't bother with all that, he said,
but his big furry ears trembled in that way I knew meant he was flattered. Come on, Cornelius, I nudged him.
Just put in an extra order of woot brandy for me, he said,
and he busied himself by buffing his monocle clean of any smudges with his sleeve. Done, I'll tell Shay, I said, then looked around for either of my wives. Speaking of which, did a pair of gorgeous things find their way in here by any chance?
I believe you might have luck on the upper floor, he said,
as he sat down behind the desk with his ink and paper and a knowing smile on his face.
There is a lovely solarium that doubles as a fabulous place to catch up on some reading.
Then I will start there. I nodded and climbed the spiral staircase behind the koala man's desk to the upper floor of the library, and I almost smacked into Rylan, who had his head buried in a thick book. Hey, champ. Watch where you're going.
Sorry, Dad,
he said with a bashful grin.
Shay found me this book about a Darshan hero on an adventure, and it's really good.
I see that, I chuckled. Just be careful when you hit the stairs, okay?
Sure thing,
he piped cheerily, and then proceeded to stick his nose right back between the pages as he continued on. It would be a miracle if he survived the steps without breaking his neck, and I shook my head like I'd seen many despairing parents do in regards to keeping their little urchins alive. Then I went in search of my wives, who were supposedly up here somewhere. The solarium wasn't hard to find, given it was where the brightest light was coming from, so I followed it until I came into a sunny chamber with comfortable lounge furniture, a massive bay window overlooking a garden, and various potted plants scattered around. Zoe and Shay were curled up in the bay window on either side like bookends, and they lounged with their feet in the other's lap as they occupied themselves with their separate tasks. My cat wife was busy sketching in the pad of paper propped up on one bent knee, while my phoenix wife apparently tried to read a book, but she'd passed out again with the book draped face down over her stomach. When I walked closer, Zoe darted her eyes up for a moment so she could smile at me, and then she resumed her work as her pink tongue poked out slightly due to her concentration.
How long has she been asleep?
I whispered as I pulled up a cushioned chair.
Not long, actually,
the catwoman whispered back.
After she picked a book out for Rylan, she came back over and passed out.
Poor thing, I chuckled. I can tell she wants to just jump back into everything with the same energy as before. Can you do me a favor, kitten?
What is it?
She asked and lowered her leg so I had the full attention of those pretty blue eyes. Can you make sure she doesn't overdo it when I'm not around? I requested. I know she tends to keep things from me at first because she was raised to be strong, but in case you notice her doing too much before me, just remind her to chill.
I will gladly keep a closer eye on our Shay,
she vowed. Thanks, I said with a relieved grin. So, what are you working on?
A few concepts of a seal for the Brightwood Estates,
she said, but then closed the pad.
I'm not finished with them yet.
So, no peeking until then? I asked with a pout and poked the notepad with my finger.
That is correct, my curious husband,
she murmured as she held the sketchbook away from my grabby hands.
You will just have to wait.
Oh, suffer, you mean? I mock grumbled, but then I got to my feet. I'll leave you alone to work, but in the meantime, I think I'll take our sleeping beauty back upstairs to our room.
Will I see you for dinner?
She asked like she always did. My initial reaction was, of course, to say, yes, of course. Why wouldn't I be? But before I could say any of that, I paused as a tug of something pulled at my gut, and I looked off in the distance as a familiar urge came over me. Actually, I think I need to meditate, I said in an odd voice, like I'd just woken up from an overly long nap.
I figured you must.
Zoe leaned over and kissed me on the cheek to get me to snap out of my brief zombie-like daze.
You get that exact expression when you need to sort your mind.
I'm sure I have no idea what you're talking about, I said, just like Horace would whenever he tried to tell a bad lie, which was always.
Sure,
she purred and kissed me properly on the mouth this time.
Go on. I'll make sure Rylan eats, and there will be food on the table in our suite for you when you're ready for it.
You're amazing, I said, and took another deep drink of her soft mouth. You always take care of our family.
You think so?
She asked and shyly looked away. I think that when the time comes, you're going to be a fantastic mother of our own kits, I murmured against the side of her cheek, and I smiled to myself when I felt the pulse quicken in her throat.
I love you.
She gasped and then pushed me away a little.
Now, you better go, or neither of us are going to be very productive.
Who says that's a bad thing? I joked and nibbled on her neck again.
Father!
Shay suddenly whimpered, and Zoe and I both froze.
No!
If we weren't trying to be so silent, we might have missed the noise altogether, because it was more of a breath than a whimper. My catwife and I waited for a moment longer to see if we needed to intervene. But after a second or two, Shay groggily blinked open her confused emerald eyes.
Hello, my love,
Zoe said when the Phoenix woman continued to stare at us like we were strangers.
Oh, hello, you two,
she sighed, and just like that, the alien look disappeared as quickly as it came.
Sorry, I fell asleep again.
That's okay, I said. You lasted way longer than ever today. I'm so proud of you.
I'm afraid,
she yawned, and she dragged herself upright as if her bones were made of brittle lead.
I'm still so sleepy.
Let me take you to bed, I said, and held out my hand.
But I was going to go over Sigil's Mall with Zoe.
She pouted, even though she let me help her to her feet.
We can tomorrow, darling,
Zoe promised, and stood up as well so she could kiss Shay on the forehead.
Rest now. Okay.
The Phoenix woman sighed again and allowed me to pick her up bridal style. With one last wink at my catwife and then a parting nod at Jenner downstairs, I exited the library, and Shay was already halfway back to dreaming by the time I made it to the upper wing. She didn't stir anymore or mumble anything else that could hint at any nightmares, but just in case, I laid on my side for a while in the large bed and just observed her breath peacefully. Eventually, the shadows in the room began to slant with the lateness of the day, and I felt the tug again to meditate, especially before the sunset. For some reason, meditation left me feeling the most refreshed if I managed to do it during either dawn or dusk, and I definitely was not a morning person. Plus, the sunsets in Gate Town were spectacular, so I reluctantly dragged myself away from my gorgeous Phoenix wife, and I went and settled myself on the ledge of the balcony. I breathed in deeply, thought of the ocean waves rolling in and out, and let my eyes close as my heartbeat slowed. In and out. Lights began to flicker beneath my eyelids, and I held on to the inevitable carousel ride of images and visions that blurred past me. This part of the meditation was always like swimming to the surface, and I could choose to try and focus on those images, but I knew it wasn't necessary because Avantol would reveal those pieces to me eventually, I guess. To be honest, I was still trying to figure out how the world itself could communicate with me, and I usually just chalked it up to some mysterious force like the Force and buckled up for whatever trip it was inclined to take me on. The most popular being trying to outswim the giant black and green Leviathan with chrome eyes. This time, however, when I broke the surface of swirling visions, I stopped and just floated in the water instead of immediately swimming like I usually did. Hello? My thoughts echoed outside of my head, and I swallowed hard. What do you want to show me? I had never asked a question like this before in this meditative subspace, but I did so now. In hindsight, I wasn't sure if my directness was a good thing or not, because it almost felt as if Avantol was just waiting for me to open that can of worms. After another beat of silence, the giant sacred fish rose up out of the water and engulfed me whole in its gaping maw.
Ah!
I yelled and fell backward off the ledge I was sitting on. More screaming echoed mine, and I pulled myself up to hunch over the balcony's rail. I was disoriented, and my heart pounded as my stomach finally got the message that we weren't fish food and slid back to its rightful spot. Then another howl ripped through the stagnant air, and I gasped at the sight of the red crescent moon as it clawed a bloody gouge into a starless sky darker than I'd ever seen.